Chronological Awareness in Dwaya, and quite a list of speaker presenters. Yalmai, you know?
Yalmai.
Can say it, yeah. Robin Beecham, Farden Elias, and Jillian Wigglesworth, and Jillian will be presenting today.
Thanks. I'm only anyone who was able to be here today, so these are my colleagues. Yalmai Yunupingu, who is the teacher linguist at the school I'm going to be talking about today. Robin Beecham, who used to work there and then retired and now seems to be working more than she did before she retired. And Farden Elias, who's our wonderful technical person, which we very much need. Because it's school term, the others weren't able to attend, unfortunately. So I'm going to give you a very brief overview of school life in the Northern Territory of Australia. I'll assume that most people are unfamiliar with this, with the odd exception. So the Northern Territory in Australia is, I haven't got a map of the whole of Australia, but it's middle top state where Darwin is located. And it's a very large physical area with a very small population. So it has a population of about 200,000 spread over this enormous area. One of the features of the Northern Territory is that many of the schools in the Northern Territory are remote. They're classified either as remote or very remote or provincial. There are no schools which are considered to be urban schools there because the size of the population is so small. And of the remote and very remote schools, about 95% of the students who attend come from Aboriginal backgrounds. The Aboriginal population of the Northern Territory is about 30%. It's not where the most Aboriginal people live, but it's where the greatest proportion of Aboriginal people live. The most actually live in New South Wales. So enrolments in these schools vary enormously, from five very tiny schools of five to much bigger schools with over 500, and as does the number of teachers who attend. So the linguistic ecology of this area, oh, there's the Northern Territory, so this is the area I was talking about. So the linguistic ecology of the Northern Territory is very complex. Children may speak the local indigenous language, although increasingly few of those situations are the case. They may speak a new mixed language, which is where the indigenous language and the Creole language have merged to develop as a new language, and there are a couple of examples of those. They may speak a Creole. There are a variety of Creoles which run across this area of the north of Australia, or they may speak an Aboriginal English, or of course they may speak a dialect of standard Australian English. One of the things that's very typical in this area is that the languages are undergoing very rapid shift and change. So the bottom line really with children growing up in remote Australia, Aboriginal children growing up in remote Australia, is that they don't speak English at home. The language of the community is usually not English, so they don't get English outside of the community. They don't speak English in the school playground on the whole, because they tend to speak their own language in the school playground. And English is a very limited commodity, although it is on the television on a very regular basis. So I like to think about this as more of a foreign language environment than a second language environment for the children when they go to school. One of the things that happened in 2008 was the introduction of a national testing system across the whole country, which meant that every child in the country was in grades 3, 5, 7 and 9 was required to take a test, which evaluated their numeracy, their literacy, their spelling and their grammar. And it's run in 1 week in May, and every child in the country takes it in this 1 week in May. and then the results are published, or are made public in the sense that they're put up on what's called the My Schools website. The effect of this has been a quite negative one on Indigenous children because they do, surprisingly, badly on it. And because they're identified as a particular group, that can be picked up. One of the other studies, which is not what I'm going to talk about today, but I'll just mention briefly, that I've done recently is reanalyzing the results of that test. And one of the things we found in that was that if you separate out the children who come from Indigenous language speaking backgrounds, in remote communities, you can show that they're actually a completely different cohort than children who come from English-speaking families, and that language very clearly plays an enormous role in these outcomes. And I say this because the government has persistently insisted that it's not about language, it's actually about attendance at school. And we were able to show in this paper that it's actually not about attendance at school. Their attendance actually makes no difference. It's the language that makes a difference. Anyway, there is a school I've been working with for many years now called Yirrkala, which is in the Northern Territory. It's here, so you can see it's very remote. There's Darwin over there, and somewhere down on the floor is Brisbane. So, well, way over here, actually. So it's a very remote school. And it has had for 40 years now a bilingual program there, and that's been a bilingual program that they've maintained despite various government cutbacks on bilingual programs, demands that only English should ever be spoken, and that kind of thing. The area is Yongamata speaking, but Yongamata has 13 different clans, and I'm not going to go into the details about those at the moment. But it also has a kind of child dialect, if you like, and that's the dialect called Duwaya. So the children come to school speaking Duwaya, and once they arrive in school, the school is a bilingual step model where the idea is that you speak, that teaching literacy is in Duwaya up until grade 3 or 4, and then the children transition to English at that point. So there are 3 Indigenous teachers there, 6 Indigenous teaching assistants, and various Indigenous resource people, but the majority of children, as is usually the case, the majority of teachers are native English speaking teachers who usually don't know the language and often don't stay very long in the school. So that's the kind of context. The bilingual program, as I said, is transitional, with the idea that children will transition to English literacy in around grade 4. It's a school that goes right through to year 12, and then once they get into grade 4, teaching increasingly becomes all in English. And there's some maintenance of the language through the high school end of the school, though it's much reduced. However, even though this is a bilingual school, and even though these children aren't introduced to grade 3, to English literacy until grade 4, they do have to take the NAPLAN in grade 3 because all children have to take the NAPLAN. It's a kind of rule. So we wanted to look at ways that we could perhaps improve their literacy in Duwaya, because one of the things that we'd noticed was that the literacy in Duwaya by grade 4 wasn't as great as it could be. So we spent a lot of time in the school with classroom observations, looking at what they were doing. I had a PhD student who spent some time there. And one of the issues with these remote schools is that there's the central school, but there are also homeland schools, which are tiny schools where people, when they go to the homeland, the children can then go to school with the idea that they get the same kind of curriculum. So although the NAPLAN was improving, the reading ability of children when they got to grade four varied massively. Some children read quite well, others didn't. And for many children, it was clear that the transition to English wasn't going to work as well as we might hope. Why is this? There's lots of issues, and I'm sure many of you are familiar with many of these issues. Children do have, on the whole, poor attendance. They have a lot of otitis media, so ear infections are a massive issue for Indigenous children. And in small communities, there's a lack of access to medical services. The language is polysynthetic. It has a central verbal unit attracting morphemes, so the words tend to be much longer than English words, which is a challenge for children to recall. So a lot of what we observed them doing in classrooms was copying down words rather than actually learning them. They have no system, or at least they had no system of teaching kids sight words as we do in English. There's an inconsistency with teaching because there aren't enough Indigenous teachers, so you get the English speaking teachers kind of teaching Dwaya as well. The Indigenous teaching assistants tend not to have sufficient training to take it on and therefore don't have the confidence to do it. And because they have to work with the curricula, the Australian curricula, that does tend to change on a regular basis. So we decided that probably the best place to start was with children in transition, which is the first year of school, in developing emergent literacy skills. Now, often emergent literacy skills in, you know, English-speaking families are the kinds of things you do at home with your kids, reading books, learning the alphabet, understanding concepts of print, recognizing sight words. Mostly this doesn't happen in these communities. And so what we decided we'd do was to see if we could, develop an early literacy teaching program to develop their phonological awareness in Dwaya rather than in English. There's endless English phonological awareness development programs on the internet, hundreds of them. But it wasn't going to work for these children because we wanted to do it in Dwaya. So we decided to do this with our developer, Faden, who I showed you before. There was a lot of work that went into this. First of all, we had to decide on the model that we were going to use. And what we decided to use was, as simply as possible, we had four pictures and you had to choose the correct one in relation to whatever the question was. So, I don't know how many of you have developed an app, but developing an app means you have to provide the developer, obviously, with very detailed instructions about exactly what you want. We developed, therefore, the instructions in English because we were working together in English, but then, of course, we had to develop a script to go with the instructions, which was in Dwaya. So we developed the script from the instructions, and then we translated the script into Yongamata, or into Dwaya. Then we back-translated it to get the final version, and we included instructions and examples for the child. So just to give you a couple of examples, we had 10 levels and we had four activities in each level. And so the first page brings up, it says it in English here, syllable segmentation, and that then you can listen to the instructions if you want to, or you can turn the instructions off and not listen to them if you have already heard them previously. And I'm afraid I haven't been able to make this animated because I'm not my technician and I don't know how to do it. You'll just have to do it without this. So here the child hears the word baru, which is a two-syllable word, and the idea is the child must identify how many syllables there are in the word. So the child then taps the, you know, just by taps the drum and the drum goes boing boing, and then they get a Manimak saying, yes, great, you know, you've got it right. And if they get it wrong, then they can repeat it. And they can repeat it as many times as they like. And there are 10 rounds on this particular activity, each with different, either two or one syllable words, because this is the first attempt they've made. So moving on to activity two, this is about segmenting a syllable. So this is about identifying what the first syllable of the word is. And it's the same kind of idea. This time the child taps on each picture and the picture, well, the picture doesn't say it, but it tells you what, it says the word that goes with that picture. And then the child is asked in the instructions to identify the one that begins with G, which is guia, fish. So the child drags the fish and puts it in the dilly basket, and then the surround here, this surround then goes green to say it's correct, and there's a congratulation thing after that. If they get the wrong one, there's a sort of, you know, that sound that, okay, that sound, that says you're always wrong, and there's a red, and they can try it again, and I'm gonna have to hurry up now. Okay. Activity three is about identifying the letter. They hear the letter, they see the letters. So they hear the letter pronounced, they see the letters, and they have to identify which letter it is just by pressing on the letter. And they get two letters in each of these goes. And then the fourth one is syllable blending. So the four pictures again, the pictures are named, and then they've got to say which one. They hear two syllables, weti, and they need to identify the kangaroo. Again, the green comes around and you get the congratulatory sound. So, these levels go on getting increasingly difficult. So in activity one, we have more syllables. In activity two, syllable identification becomes the final syllable for the second lot, and then the medial syllable in levels three and four. In activity three, there's alternating letters and sounds, and let me show you how the sounds work, because it's cute, really. The sounds work, so the child clicks on one of the baby kangaroos and hears a sound and has to drag the baby kangaroo to the appropriate pouch. So here's a half done one, and you can see that these are the child heard these sounds and dragged the kangaroo, and they go on until they've got all the kangaroos sitting in the mother's pouch. Did I finish this? Yes, and then blending is for the level four activities. So for the next lot, levels 5 to 8, once the children have been able to do those first four levels, so that's 44 sets of tasks in four levels, which are all mostly related to syllables, they move on to phonemes. And so the tasks are very similar, although with different pictures. Phoneme tapping with the drum, so that's, you know, we had the word, what do we have just before? Weti, so w-e-ti. Okay, so they have to identify the phonemes. This is more difficult for children. Syllables are pretty easy. Almost all kids can pick up syllables. But the phonemes are more difficult, and so they get quite a lot of practice in this. This goes through to level 10 now. And again, they get the initial, final, medial, phoneme identification, and they get the continue on with the alphabet with the alternating sounds and letters, and the blending phonemes into longer words. So once they've learned how to do it, they're pretty set and they can do it on their own, and that's the idea, is that they'll be able to do that. So we're at the stage now where we've pre-tested levels 1 to 4, and this has led to a number of changes. We've introduced a congratulatory sound that's different in it. We had the same thing before and it got boring, so we've introduced different ones. We're also coming up with a reward system which will build up a reward going through as the children finish each of the levels. And we're going to test the first 10 levels across the school next month. And the idea is that it will be ready for the children to use in school in 2020, starting in 2020. Many people to thank, as always. One thing I'll say about this app is that the way we've developed it is that it's modular, so you can actually change you can change the pictures, you can change the sound, you can change the instructions. And the reason we did it like this is because we felt that we wanted to develop something that could be used in other communities if they wanted to use something of this type. But they would need to change the pictures because the words have to go along with the length of the word has to, you've got to start with the shorter words. Good luck with that, Bill. and then build them up. So you can change pictures, you don't have to record the words again, change the sounds, and it should be, once we've finished it, usable in other communities as well. Time's up, I'm told.
Definitely have time for questions. Well, I have one.
No, someone's okay, got okay. One too.
You mentioned there were different groups and maybe there's some language variation. Does that lead to what you're asking people to count the number of phonemes and words are slightly different? Does that have
No, I mean you could use this with a completely different language. When I was talking about different groups, what I mean, Yongumata is has got about 13 different dialects. The children tend to use Dwaya, and it's an interesting history actually. By the time they're about 14, they're expected to learn their own clan language, and their clan language is determined by their father. One of the things that's happening in that, it's a large area, one of the things that's happening in that area is that they tend not to be starting to use the clan languages now at 14. They tend to be putting it off until they're in the 20s. And so there's a lot of angst about the clan languages actually disappearing because the kids aren't really growing up using them in the way that they used to. But in terms of what other language wanted to use something like that, I mean, that depends on the language and, you know, because you can't start off with great long. You'd have to change the pictures because if your word, like in English, for kangaroo is kangaroo, that's not really a good word to start with. Yeah?
Yeah, it's just a question, a practical question about technology in the classroom. So would the kids be provided with a tablet or would they have their phone?
It's done on the tablet, and this particular school, as is the case with many schools, does have a class set of tablets. So, and we have an arrangement with the tech guy that he'll maintain the upgrades. You know how when you have to upgrade the tablet, when you have an upgrade that you have to do on, say, this is done on a iPad. So when it upgrades, eventually it gets to the point where you've got to upgrade the app on it as well. So he's agreed to keep on upgrading the app so it'll keep on working with the school, because that's the problem. We've did one earlier on, a much smaller version, and that was the problem we ran into, was that it kind of didn't automatically get upgraded, and so it stopped working once you got to a certain level of whatever it's called, I don't know what it's called. System.
That's a good question. So this was originally developed to help improve the students' reading ability in their language. So do you have any data yet on if it has helped them to
We haven't
to do
got
this?
That.
Okay.
I can't tell you how long it's taken. It's taken much longer than we all thought it would
take.
The students will start using it next year. So, and then we'll collect data over the next few years after that. So hopefully we will be able to.
So the students haven't started even using it yet in the classroom?
No, because, well, we've done a trial of it, but they haven't actually started using it. And they need to start using it at the beginning of the year, really.
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, we'll probably introduce this across years, transition one and two, initially for the kids.
In the trial, did they like it? Because it looks
They love
fun.
It, yeah,
yeah
they love
okay.
it. I mean, the only thing was they got a bit, because we had MoneyMap, which is, you know, good, well, sort of well done after each thing, and they got bored of hearing the same thing. So
yeah.
we've changed that to
different
words, just to, and then we've also introduced a reward system where they build up a reward and, you know, get something at the end. Yeah.
So then, was it based on activities that teachers were doing with students in the classroom already, or was it the inconsistency of teaching quality that
they weren't really
motivated?
Doing these sorts of
so
things were in
the
classroom? So this is a sort of, it's trying. They weren't really focusing actually on teaching the kids phonological awareness. What they were doing was focusing on teaching the kids whole words, and that doesn't really work if you're not the kind of kid who can work out the phonological stuff on your own. And a lot of kids can't do that. Like a lot of kids, you know, we know this from English speaking, that's horrible. We know this from English speaking kids that there's a large proportion of kids, probably well over 50%, who actually need to be taught phonological awareness. You may remember the whole word approach to learning to read. It left an awful lot of kids out in the cold. So we just thought, well, we'll just go with this and see how that works, because they tend not to get taught it.
And would there be an issue with the phonological awareness of some teachers as well?
Quite possibly. But they can learn from this too.
Sure.
Yeah.
What kind of rewards have you got in mind for it?
Oh, look, the others have been working on that, actually, and I just got an email today to say the reward system has been uploaded, but I haven't had time to upload it, so I haven't looked at it yet. But if you come and ask me a bit later, I'll let you know. But we talked about things like, you know, getting bits of a puzzle and then building the puzzle up, or those sorts of things. And then we're going to have a whole lot more stuff, which is going to introduce more complex things, like introduce a whole lot of sight words that they'll need to learn, and also deal with the suffixes in the language. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody.
Next are the talk stories and workshops.